Used to be Andy and Barney Fife. Now a tired stern and a brothel life. Too much crap drive the world insane. Everybody singing the jailhouse blues. Don't believe a word of the evening news. Truth stood for years down the drain. Trailer parks with the building cold. Cul-de-sacs in the country road. High-tech bars with bad karaoke sounds. Uncle Sam keeps your money spent. Pay your tithes, you can't pay your rent. Foreign car selling big in American towns. What happened? Does anybody know? What happened? Where did America go? Everything Walmart all the time. No more mama, pop, five and dime. What happened? Where did America go? Where did America go?
Well, in the scheme of things, I think an awful lot of us know where it went. Will it ever come back? Interesting question. Good evening, Jeff Bennett here with another installment of The Edge of Darkness for this Tuesday, 80th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. Interesting how time flies when you're getting screwed. I had an interesting day. Did some work on the Kelly site last night, posted four or five articles. Did some things later today with Sierra Madre Precious Metals, new headlines up there, new links for articles that are well worth looking at. I had to kind of balance myself to determine exactly where I wanted to go with this program tonight. There is some marvelous historical stuff, and I love getting into the economics of the era of Rome and Greece and historically what happened economically. But we've covered it. And frankly, I am of the distinct belief that few people really care about what happened 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago. Because I honestly believe that very few listeners get it. They don't understand that we have this tendency of watching history repeat itself over and over and over again. Kind of an interesting example. There's a headline we posted at Sierra Madre called Taking Gold Candy from a Fiat Baby. And the opening sentence of the article alone shows what happens historically. Britain lost the Battle of Yorktown in 1781. After 80 years, there was the U.S. Civil War in 1861. And about 80 years later, on December the 7th, 1941, Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. Today, December 7th, 2021, is another 80-year anniversary for America. Does more conflict lie ahead? It says a lot, doesn't it? It truly says a lot. Do I dare delve into it? Probably not. Or maybe so. Because you see, for many years now, there's been a contingent of alternative economists working diligently within the so-called liberty movement to combat disinformation being spread by the mainstream media regarding America's true economic condition. Efforts have focused primarily on the continued devaluation of the dollar, the forced dependence on globalism that has outsourced and eliminated most U.S. manufacturing and production of raw materials. The problem of devaluation and stagflation have been present since 1916. Now, we know that the Federal Reserve came into being, at least congressionally speaking, in 1913. But it was 1916 when the Federal Reserve officially was formed and given power and came into being. But the true impetus for a currency collapse and the destruction of American buying power began not so many years ago. In the 2007-2008 time period, when the financial crisis was used as an excuse to allow the Fed to create trillions upon trillions of dollars in stimulus, and did so for well over a decade, and they're still doing it. You see, the mainstream media's claim has always been that the Fed saved the U.S. from imminent collapse, and that the central bankers are heroes. I mean, after all, stock markets have mostly skyrocketed since quantitative easing was introduced during the credit crash, and stock markets are a measure of economic health, right? Yeah, more like the devil's bargain. Reality, my friends, is not a mainstream media story. The U.S. economy is not the stock market. All the Federal Reserve really accomplished was to forge a devil's bargain, trading one manageable deflationary crisis for at least one or more highly unmanageable inflationary crises down the road. And central banks kicked the can on the collapse, making it far worse in the process. But the U.S. economy in particular is, well, extremely vulnerable right now. Money created from thin air by the Fed has been used to support failing banks and corporations, not just here in America, but also banks and companies around the world. And because the dollar has been the world's reserve currency for the better part of the past century, the Fed has been able to print cash while, with wild abandon, mostly avoid inflationary consequences. This was especially true in the decade after the derivatives crunch of '08. Why? The dollar's global reserve status means that dollars are likely to be held overseas in foreign banks and corporate coffers to be used in global trade. But there is no such thing as a party that goes on forever. Eventually the punch runs out, the lights go out. If the dollar is devalued too much, whether by endless printing or new money or by relentless inflationary pressures at home, all those overseas dollars will come flooding back into the U.S. And the result becomes an inflationary avalanche, a massive injection of liquidity exactly when it will cause the most trouble. And my friends, we are now, today, close to this point of no return. As you've said for a long time, when inflation becomes visible to the public and their pocketbooks take a hit, this is when the real crisis begins. Now, let me share with you another headline that we've got posted at Sierra Madre Precious Metals today. Social Security COLA calculations may get changed to CPIE as part of the Democrats' reform bill. And what does it mean for retirees? It means mourning, which means sadness, grief. It means anguish, despair, pain, hurt, loneliness, sadness, sorrow, loss, melancholy, depression. It means all of these things. We better watch out for the cost of housing, medical care, and gasoline, because even though we've been promised this biggest increase in Social Security in many, many years this upcoming year, inflation's eating it up already. Do you get it, Jack? So now we face a catch-22 situation, and the Fed must make a choice to continue with inflationary programs and risk taking the blame for extreme price increases, taper these programs and risk an implosion of stock markets, which have long been artificially inflated by stimulus. But it's simple. Without Fed support, without the support from the Federal Reserve, which is owned by foreigners, stock markets will die. And we had a taste of this the last time the Fed flirted with tapering back in 2018. Look, it's simple. The Federal Reserve is not a banking institution on a mission to protect American financial interests. They are an ideological suicide bomber waiting to blow itself up and deliberately derail or destroy the American economy at the right moment. I believe that bankers would need a cover event to hide their calculated economic attack. Otherwise, they would take full blame for the resulting disaster, and I don't think that's going to happen. So this year we have faced the COVID pandemic. Subsequent lockdowns, supply chain snarls have now provided that cover event. And 2 years after this plandemic began, and the Fed has pumped out approximately $6 trillion more in stimulus, that's official, and helicopter money through PPP loans, COVID checks. And on top of all of that, Joey's ready to drop another $1 trillion in the span of the next couple of years through his recently passed infrastructure bill. Just remember this. Infrastructure bills do not lead to recovery. Only increase federal control. Now, you think about that for a moment. You begin to realize that production of fiat money is not the same as real production within the economy. Trillions of dollars in public works programs might create more jobs, but will also inflate prices as the dollar goes into decline. I like to call it a spiral, downward. But in simple terms, what this means is that unless wages are adjusted constantly according to price increases, people will have jobs but still won't be able to afford a comfortable standard of living. That is what leads to stagflation, in which prices continue to rise while wages and consumption stagnate. Another catch-22 to consider is that if inflation becomes rampant, the Federal Reserve may be compelled, or claim that they are compelled, to raise interest rates significantly in a short span of time, which would mean an immediate slowdown in the flow of overnight loans to major banks, an immediate slowdown in loans to large and small businesses, an immediate crash in credit options for consumers, and an overall crash in consumer spending. Now, you might recognize this as the recipe that created the 1981-82 recession, the third worst in the 20th century. In other words, my friends, the choice is stagflation or deflationary depression. And having understood those are the two choices that are going to eventually be presented to us, or already have, it would appear that the Fed has already chosen stagflation. You see, we've now reached the stage of the game in which stagflation is becoming a household term. It's only going to get worse from here on. And according to official Consumer Price Index, or CPI calculations, and Fed data, we are now witnessing the largest inflation surge in over 30 years, but the real story is a hell of a lot more concerning. Because they always play the numbers, right? Which means they make them up. CPI numbers are manipulated, and they have been since the 1990s when calculation methods were changed and certain unsavory factors were removed. Now, if we look at inflation according to the original way of calculation, it is actually double that which is being reported by the government today. What are they claiming it is? 6.5%? It's probably 13% or higher. Because remember, years ago, they removed food and fuel from the inflationary figures. But in the interim, we deal with necessities like food, housing, energy. They've all exploded in price, but we are only at the beginning. Joey's infrastructure bill and the pandemic stimulus are not the only culprits behind this stagflation event. This has been a long time coming. And I know a change has got to come. All of this is the culmination of many years of central bank stimulus sabotage, multiple presidents supporting multiple dollar devaluation schemes. Joey simply appears to be the president to put the final nail in the coffin of the U.S. economy. Or maybe it'll be Kamala. It's all going to be up to how long Joey can maintain his mental health facade. But then we've got to ask, how bad will it all get? We can use the word collapse. It's really not too strong of a word. I mean, it is, but nobody seems to pay attention to it anymore. I think that most alternative economists have called the situation correctly in predicting a collapse. It's often treated as a loaded term, but I don't know what else we could call the scenario we're facing. The COVID lockdowns, the battle over the vax mandates have perhaps distracted Americans from an even larger danger of financial instability. That fight's important. It must continue, but stopping the mandates does not mean the overarching threat of economic chaos goes away. Oh, and both of them serve the interests of central bankers and globalists. Don't kid yourself. Some of the key policies within the literature for the Great Reset and what the World Economic Forum calls the Fourth Industrial Revolution includes what they call UBI, or Universal Basic Income. There's the sharing economy, eventually a global digital currency system using the IMF's special drawing rights basket as a foundation. And essentially, it'll all be a form of global technocratic communism. And if you enjoy individual freedom, being forced into total reliance on the government for your very survival, it just doesn't sound all that damned appealing to me. Because to obtain such a system would require a catastrophe of epic proportions. The COVID pandemic gets the globalists part of the way there, but it's obviously not enough. COVID has not convinced many hundreds of millions of people around the world to give up their freedoms for the sake of security. But maybe a stagflationary collapse will accomplish what COVID is not. Accelerated price spikes in necessities, including housing and food, is going to generate mass poverty and homelessness. There's no chance that wages are ever going to keep up with those costs. Well, the government could step in with more stimulus to help major corporations and businesses increase wages, but it basically would be the beginning of a universal basic income, or UBI. better known as free money for everyone. It would only cause more dollar devaluation, more inflation. Of course, they could try to freeze prices, as a lot of the commie regimes have in the past, but it only leads to increased manufacturing shutdowns because the costs of production are too high. The profit incentives are horribly low. So, I suspect that the establishment will bring back regular checks, like COVID checks, for the public, now struggling to deal with ever-increasing expenses and uncertainty. But if they do it, there's going to be strings attached this time. Don't expect a UBI check, for example, if you refuse to comply with the vax mandates. And if you run a business, don't expect stimulus aid if you hire non-compliant workers. Oh, no, UBI gives the government ultimate control over everything, and a stagflationary crisis gives them the perfect opportunity to introduce permanent UBI. You see, the mainstream can no longer deny the fact that stagflation is happening. And it is a threat. So hopefully those people that have not been educated on the situation will learn quickly enough to complete the preparations necessary to survive. Countering stagflation will require localized production, decentralization, a move away from reliance on the global supply chain, the institution of local currency systems, maybe using state banks like the one in North Dakota as a model. Might have barter markets, physical precious metals that rise in value along with inflationary pressures. There's a lot that needs to be done, very little time to do it. But at the bottom, the fight against economic collapse and the Great Reset begins with each individual and how they prepare, how you and I individually prepare. For each person caught by surprise, stricken with poverty, is just another person added to the hungry mob begging the establishment for draconian solutions like UBI. Each properly prepared individual is, as always, an obstacle to authoritarianism. And my friends, yeah. It's not good. It's time we choose which one we're going to be. I think that that's going to be a difficult situation for many people. I look in frustration each and every day. Another article that we have published today called When Fiat Currency Stops Being Money. I mean, let's be honest. Didn't want to do that. Hit the wrong button. Yeah, I do that once in a while. I've been hitting a lot of wrong buttons all day today. Come on. Oh, it doesn't want to move. Try again. Oh, please, come on. No, it doesn't want to do it. What the hell's happening here? Let's try this one more time. Oh, I'm having one of those days. Let me try this. No, it's totally freezing. I wonder if the battery's shot in my mouse. Nope, it opened. God, what a nightmare. What a freaking nightmare. To some degree, this is a continuation of what we've been talking about. When fiat currency stops being money. So now we approach this in a slightly different manner. Most emerging Come on. And developed market currencies have devalued significantly relative to the United States dollar in 2021, despite the Federal Reserve's aggressive monetary policy. Furthermore, emerging economies have benefited from rising commodity prices, have also seen their currencies weaken despite strong exports. And as such, inflation in developing economies is much higher than the already elevated figures posted in this country and in the Eurozone. The main reason behind this is a global currency debasement problem that is making citizens around the world poorer. Central banks globally implementing the same expansionary policies of the European Central Bank and the Federal Reserve System, but the results are disproportionately hurting the poor as inflation rises, particularly in essential goods and services, and yet fiscal and monetary imbalances are increasing. And yet, in this country, everybody's on the dole. One way or the other, there's so damn much money getting doled out for free. Emerging economies have implemented a very dangerous policy of boosting twin deficits, fiscal and trade, under the misguided idea that it's going to accelerate growth. But now growth and recovery estimates are coming down, but monetary imbalances remain. And because of this, most currencies are falling relative to the U.S. dollar. Policies implemented by global central banks are as aggressive or even more so than those of the Federal Reserve, but without the global demand that the U.S. dollar enjoys. You know, in Cuba, inflation is now estimated at 6,900%. Due to the lack of demand for a worthless currency with no real demand or reserves to back it. That's Cuba, baby. They're only 90 miles south of Florida. But understand that once this kind of a thing happens, the state no longer creates money. It simply issues a means of payment, the currency, using the credibility of private sector demand to issue its promissory notes. And like a debt issuer who uses or loses repayment credibility, the value of this promise fades if the currency does not have private backing. What are those poor Cubans going to do? Oh, remember this. The value of the currency and its use, it's not decided by the government. It is decided by the last private sector agent who accepts the promise of payment because they assume that it will maintain its value. Yeah. I just blacked out. No, I just all of a sudden froze up. I have no idea where I left off here. And it's like, what in the hell was I doing? That's how tired I am. Something we're going to do unusual on this program tonight, and I think we can pass on the break, Michael, because I've got to get through a few more things before we get down to our very special ending tonight. So consider the Cuban situation. How far away are we being from another Cuba? I know, that's a tough one to call. You can't possibly see that ever happening. Just remember this. Those who say that the state can always create money and spend it, and only has to create the money it needs to finance the public sector because it will be accepted by the rest of the economic agents, should be obliged to receive their salaries in Argentinian pesos and enjoy the experience. If you aren't aware of it, the Argentinian peso is basically a dead currency. It's worth nothing. Interesting things to consider. Let's see what this one gives us. Aha! something interesting.
A very lengthy piece that we're not even going to begin to touch on. It comes from the Organic Prepper. We've got the headline pasted on Sierra Madre Precious Metals, called A Wartime Economy, Tips for Financial Survival. I strongly urge you to read that article tonight. It is amazingly important that you do so. You have to understand where the author began, how he's chosen to live his life, preparing for the inevitable.
Inevitable what, Bennett?
The end? The crisis? The big walkout? The big failout? This is a very lengthy piece. It's not all that lengthy. But it hits the nail on the head. It's well worth looking at. A Wartime Economy, Tips for Financial Survival. Another lengthy article. Choking on myself here tonight. Interesting piece. On the gold standard, how government seized control of money and the total abandonment of precious metals. This is the second piece that I was seriously looking at getting into tonight, but very, very lengthy, getting into the Roman history about how they famously devalued the currency for long periods of time, most notably under Diocletian, which led to the ruin of many Roman citizens. Because it's a mistake to regard the era of the classical gold standard as a period of state weakness in financial and monetary matters. And once again, to go back and learn from history and make some necessary changes is well worth it. I had a very brief conversation the other night with a gentleman who, at the time, I did not get his name. It just went right over the top of my head. Said he'd call in a few days. Well, he did. He called this morning and placed a sizable order for some of the half sovereigns. And when he called back to finalize some things, actually I called him. He wanted to know if he could increase the number, because a friend of his wanted some too. And what became interesting is I figured that I'd never spoke with him before, but apparently at one point in time I did, because his name, his email is in my records. But whether he and I had done anything in the past or not is questionable. However, many years ago, he had done business with Robbie Noel. And Robbie Noel and I worked together for a lot of years. We also worked for opposing companies, and yet we never let that ruin our relationship. And for those of you who know who I'm talking of, Robbie passed away some years ago. And his Facebook account's still there, but it's had no activity since 2016. And it's interesting to look at it, to understand the history. And so the gentleman placed this order, and payments on the way, and all this good stuff. And I did not realize I had his stuff, and he gave me his email address. And I, when I went to send the paperwork, I took the email address that I had posted and put it up there. And son of a gun, a totally different name popped up. His given name and that of his wife. And so obviously that I did have a record of some kind of a transaction, not the transaction itself, because I tend to try to get rid of those things.
I don't want them. Legally, I must maintain records for 2 years of any transaction we do. And I endeavor to eliminate that stuff as soon as I possibly can. I don't want the record. You know what you've got. If you call and have to raise funds and need to sell some stuff, you better know what you've got to sell. Because if it's over a couple of years old, chances are I'm not going to have it. There are a few exceptions to that.
What?
Those have to do with the relations I have with those specific clients. You know, I've got business I've done with people that goes back some 25-odd years. I'm going to do something unusual tonight. This has been a very unusual day for me. Not for some of the reasons that I brought up earlier. My health issues are giving me difficulty, and I'm not happy about it, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I was supposed to go in for work with my urologist today, and something was not right in the way I felt. And I decided to call and cancel the appointment and see if I could get a new appointment. This is something that I don't want to keep putting off. I've now had this catheter for 3+ months. It is scaring the poop life out of me having it this long. But it's what I'm having to deal with. So I canceled. And my problem is I called to make a new appointment. They cannot now get me in until the 29th of this month. Unless I call every day, every couple of days, and see if there's been a cancellation. But I may have to travel close. I may have to travel far to get to an office that is available for me. And that can be a real problem because I'm finding I'm liking driving less and less and less. But that's not the point. My day was unusual for a number of reasons. My wife stopped and picked up my mail today after work. I had a package which had been returned to me because invariably I had accidentally shipped a woman two packages of books which she had ordered, Dr. Kelly's books. And she called to let me know that, and she sent the other package back. I had a letter from a longtime friend and listener. And then I had a very strange package from Canada. And this piece coming down from Toronto, who's ordered a couple of Dr. Kelly's books. And Antonita, I believe, is her name, if I'm reading this correctly. I did receive your envelope. We'll endeavor to get this out tomorrow, if possible, and get it on its way to you up in Canada. I've not shipped a package to Canada in quite a while. We had distributors at one time. I don't know what's happened. I have a real distinct feeling that the guy is doing some illegal reproduction of the books and shipping them out, and that's kind of spooky. But then I received something via email. I share it with you because of a listener's opinion, not because it's a letter that was written to me. I don't very often get things like this. I'll get brief comments from John, who goes by the name of Veteran, and Larry Powell and people like this who are regular listeners and readers at our sites. But this particular piece blew me away. I share the gentleman's letter with you now. We're going to be closing out early tonight with a piece of music that I just need to hear every couple of days.
The gentleman begins by saying, I look forward to hearing you speak on your program. And I felt that yesterday you were hitting upon some important points, which has inspired me to write to you today. I'm a young man. I began college early in the 2010s. And what I saw then was the tail end of sexual liberation on the college campuses. As Dr. E. Michael Jones says, sexual liberation is political control. I spent many years in these colleges, and what I saw during this decade was a descent into madness. Sexual liberation turned into fear of being raped, and so less men attended college. More women, meaning more feminists, more fear of men. It goes without saying that these colleges, the large ones in Manitoba, Canada, have no use for Christian ethics, but seek to uphold secular humanism, the religion of the United Nations. And, of course, the pretender Brandon is said to have come up with the BBB plan, but this BBB plan was exactly stated by the United Nations in 2015. The media gives Brandon too much credit. Many issues are combining for the UN 2030 and Agenda 21 plans, our writer continues. Here, the government must fly in refugees, or many of them have been simply crossing the land border illegally, and this is what the elites want. They want to destroy the family to depopulate the world. Abortion, sexual liberation, the pill, feminism, CRT, the homosexual agenda, the child trafficking, drug trafficking, the genocide by injection, the plan for AI-based control. When you talk about the illegals and abortion, I see it as working hand in hand. They want to kill off the native people, bring in the illegals, and as you said, get them to vote for socialism. Also, like you said, if young people were married and had children, we would not have this abortion problem. Oh, I understand very well that there is a planned effort to prevent young people from having children or being married by normalizing homosexuality. I saw this when I was in college, he continues. Oh, there were great incentives for homosexuals, and there was the attitude that Christian ethics were odious. He says, I spent a lot of time studying philosophy. It was no accident that Sartre wrote about men seeking abortions for their women in his novels. Mr. Bennett, what you say concerning the faith also reminds me of Bishop Richard Williamson, a very devout man. I've been convinced of the philosophical evils underlying the ills of our world today. Solutions will be found in studying history and seeking the truth. And because of this, the enemies of truth desire to prevent everyone from thinking. Thus, they push sexual liberation. Thank you once again. Signed, John Zibram. And I hope I pronounced your last name properly, John. I was amazingly honored to receive this note from you today. Many of our readers respond to us through the comments section on Federal Observer. I removed the comments section on drkelly.info some years ago because it is infested with so much spam. 99% of all the comments left are spam. They are not signed up members of the site. There's nothing that's being added in their commentary that's not advertisement or something like that. There's no point in having comments left on Sierra Madre Precious Metals. I love to get comments on Metropolis.cafe. But unfortunately, I only have so much time to devote to cleaning this stuff out. I have lost track of what is available for free or things that I have to pay for. And everything you want to add to a website today costs more and more money. Last week, we shared this story about that came from the New Yorker about the abortion case or the anti-Roe v. Wade case taking place in Supreme Court. And son of a gun, what happens? What happens? Eventually, oh, my freebies ran out, the New Yorker. And they had an amazing piece today that I really needed to get out and share with you, and we would have done it. And guess what? I've used my time. I've used my freebies for the month, so I can't get them. Problem is, I did subscribe to the New Yorker. But guess what? I can't find my passcode. So I got to get in there and see if I can come up with something new. Oh, goody, goody, goody. Boy, I'm scrolling away here. I can't find exactly what I'm looking for. What'd you tell me, 4830? I've lost track, man. I've absolutely, yeah, I got it, 4820. All right, cool. Anyway, so I thank John for his carefully thought out piece of writing. I made a decision to post it on Federal Observer today. If for no other reason to get other people to read his words and think carefully through all of this. Our times are trying. They're going to get worse. You've got to think about that. I expect to be back here with you tomorrow, working on some cancer-related and health-related things for tomorrow's program. I'm closing out early tonight because I'm excessively tired and weak and worn out tonight. And a tremendous piece of music. The video is also on Sierra Madre PreciousMetals.com. But it's a piece I can't stop listening to because it's so damned enjoyable from a singer who's now deceased who was absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. One of the most talented vocalists I've ever heard in my life. And I continue to listen to him very often. And so we're going to close down tonight and share with you his piece of music. And I hope you'll enjoy it. A little unusual for the type of music I normally play on our program. Luther Vandross, just remember, a house is not a home. Thank you for being with me tonight. Stay with us. It's got a very unusual opening on this piece of music. See you tomorrow.
The story goes. Yeah. chair is still a chair, even when there's no one sitting there. But oh, a chair is not a house, and a house is not a home when there's no one there to hold. Are you gonna be in love with me? I want you.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.